Greetings, I'm Fred Zaspel. Welcome to another author interview here at Books at a Glance. I'm actually not in Hawaii, even though it looks like it. I'm just put that up, I guess, because that's where I want to be. We're talking to Dr. Steve Wellham again about his Systematic Theology, Volume 1. Steve, welcome back.
Glad to be back, and I think that's a great desire to be in a beautiful spot like that.
I know. Well, you know, it's turning cooler here, and I have to wear a sweatshirt, and I thought, well, at least I can look like I'm happy. All right, we are working now into chapter 14. We are well into it. We've had two interviews with you on this chapter. We're in part three of the book, where you're dealing with the big picture of things. You've dealt with the large story of the Bible, creation, fall, redemption, new creation. You have established that story is carried by the covenants. Those covenants are progressively revealed, some various other hermeneutical points with it. Now I thought we would come to talk about the covenants themselves. So, first of all, the covenant of creation that you call. Covenant theology, of course, has a covenant of works. Dispensational theology often recognizes the same. Sometimes it's called an Adamic covenant by them. John Murray calls it Adamic administration, I think. So a few questions here you can take your time with. First of all, what's the ground of calling this a covenant? And then second, what are the provisions of this covenant? And how does it differ from the covenant of works that we have in covenant theology, if at all?
No, crucial issue and such foundational, because whole theological views, you know, all have to go back to creation, origins, and certainly the role of Adam. And you and I are both, strenuously arguing, right, that we must hold to a historic Adam, historic fall, Adam and Eve as the first couple of the human race, and created that way, not coming from pre-Adamite figures and everything else. You just have to say that today, because so much of the theological world has moved in the theistic evolution, and people like Tim Keller and John Stott and others who, you know, were highly respected, moved in that direction. And I think this is just deadly to the biblical story and the biblical teaching and so on. So all of that's, takes us back to Adam. And I do argue that, and this is basically in agreement with Reformed covenant theology, and Reformed covenant theology develops really in its, you have precursors of it. You can go back to Athanasius, and he's speaking of basically a kind of covenant with Adam. He doesn't use those terms back in the early church and on the incarnation. But, covenant theology, federalism just simply meaning covenant from the Latin, really develops in the post-Reformation era. You see it in Calvin, but really it's a post-Reformation, the further understanding of scripture and so on. So I basically follow that Reformed position, and some people think that I'm not, type of thing, but I am. And then we still have to make some careful distinctions of why I call it a covenant of creation versus using the term covenant of works and so on. But I do think that the original situation with Adam is a covenant. Now, what's the ground for that? I mean, the main objection is that the word covenant is not found. Another objection that is also found is that a number of people assume that covenants are always redemptive. So that if they're redemptive in the pre-fall situation, then you don't have a covenant relationship. And so those are standard sort of arguments that say there is no covenant here. Dispensational theology, you mentioned dispensational theology, and all dispensationalists have to talk about the role of Adam, right? So when I interact with Craig Blazing, Daryl Bach, and other contemporary dispensationalists, they certainly speak about the importance of Adam, but they really do not want to speak about a covenant relationship here, primarily because of that sense that the word covenant's not found. Now, I think my argument would be, just because the word isn't there doesn't mean that there's not a covenant relationship. So then I have to give some specific arguments for this. So one would be, and this is disputed. I think it can be demonstrated, but but Peter Gentry and then William Dumbrell before him, and maybe others have argued that some of the language of covenant, of cutting covenants and establishing covenants, cutting covenants usually speaks of initiation of a brand new covenant and establishing an ongoing relationship of a covenant that's already in place. When you come to Noah, in the first time that the word covenant is used in scripture, in Genesis 6 through 9, the covenant is established. It's not cut. And so Peter and Dumbrell and others will argue that that is a distinction that is very, very important. And so when we get to Noah, a covenant is established, yet it's presupposing something already in place. And of course, that would make sense because Noah is presented, I think, in scripture as a sort of a continuation of Adam. Now, obviously, it's a post-fall situation. It's a fallen world.